Welcome to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and your host is psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson. So today we're going to be talking about one of the biggest issues plaguing our teenagers, and that is loneliness and the longing to connect with others. Now more than ever, young people feel alone, and our guest is my good friend Andy Brainer. I'm going to introduce him in just a moment. He's here to discuss the patterns teenagers often fall into when they long to fit in, and also how to help parents come alongside their teens and help them develop meaningful relationships, as well as learn to depend on God for the only form of connection that will truly ever satisfy. Now, Andy, I've known you for a long time.
Long time.
And I appreciate you coming in today.
Yeah, thanks.
But our listeners don't know everything about you.
Right.
And I can't tell them everything, but I do want to let them get to know you a little bit better. You're an ordained youth minister. You're the president of Camp Kivu in Durango, Colorado.
Yeah.
You've got a master's from Denver Seminary, and you've also spent time at the Oxford Center for Apologetic Research with Ravi Zacharias.
Yeah.
That sounds like it was hard.
That's a lot of stuff.
It is.
Yeah.
You're a smart guy.
Just trying to figure out what makes teenagers tick and how to tell them about how to live more like Jesus.
Well, not only are you the president of Camp Kivu, but you also run something called a gap year, which takes place between the senior year of high school and the freshman year of college. We're going to get to that in a minute, too. But Camp Kivu is a Christian camp here in Colorado. It's amazing. It's got all the camp experiences, and you also teach apologetics to kids that come.
Right, right.
How did you decide that you were going to have classroom time in the midst of whitewater rafting and rock climbing and all that kind of stuff?
Right. So we started the camp as basically just a camp like every other camp where you could come to Colorado and do all the stuff. And as I was sort of interviewing teenagers and asking them, you know, why would you come to this place? You know, they said, well, you know, we really want something more. And so I started doing these little Bible studies and started doing these things around the country. And I noticed that students were really interested in knowing what and why they believe what they believe.
Mm-hmm.
So I put together this 30-hour curriculum for students to come to camp and actually spend the morning time working on faith issues. And in the afternoon time, we just have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And so the first day that we opened this place, we had 240 kids coming in.
Nice.
And I had this one track where kids could choose to do the apologetic stuff. And I started thinking, man, who in their right mind goes to summer camp and does apologetic? I mean, that just sounds like the
Who's
going
to go to summer camp in the mountains, river flowing through, and go, I think what I want to do is sit in a classroom.
And talk about Jesus for my summer camp experience. So I got really nervous. And I went to my wife, Jamie Jo, and I said, look, nobody's going to choose to do this. We've got to come up with a different way. Let's give them another option. Let's just let them choose. So we have 240 kids that are coming. And so we developed this whole athletic thing where they could train in the morning if they wanted to. And they could go play and jet ski and do the high ropes course stuff and train on athletic stuff. And it was just a totally different experience. So the kids come in the first night and I explain to them, we have this course where you can take and learn about what you believe and is there a God and how do we live out our Christian life in culture that doesn't seem to be so Christian. And or you can go play. You can go jet ski. You can do whatever you want. Out of 240 kids, 238 of them chose to do the apologetic deal. Two kids.
Voluntarily.
Voluntarily. They came into the sessions in the classroom. Two kids said, nah, I don't want to do that. So that's when I knew we were onto something, and that's how we built what we built.
I think you just pricked some parents' ears right there. I think some were like, wait, what? They're listening.
They just don't know. You know, we have a culture that doesn't really teach kids the foundations of the faith.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really reason through anymore why we do what we do. We've sort of isolated Christianity from the culture, and there's no real interaction. Yeah. So what I provide is just a link between Christianity and culture, and this is how live like Jesus in the culture.
Well, I know that you're doing a great job. I've talked to kids that have gone there. I've been to your camp a bunch of times, and I highly, highly recommend it.
Thanks, man.
Andy, how long have you been running camps?
This is my 15th summer.
15th summer.
Yeah, 15th
You've been
summer.
Around lots of kids.
Yeah, thousands and thousands of kids.
In your quote-unquote off-season, you're traveling all over the world speaking to kids.
Yeah.
Now, this is why we're going to talk about your book today. It's called Alone, Finding Connection in a Lonely World. It's a great book. It's a good resource for parents talking about the issue of loneliness. And I don't think that's one necessarily parents would put at the top of issues facing kids, you know, way up there on the top. But you've been involved with kids for 15 years in camps. You speak all over the world to thousands and thousands of teens. A publisher called, said, we love your stuff, Andy. We want you to write on what's the most pressing issue facing teens today.
Yeah.
And you said, oh, loneliness.
Yeah. They said, what's the biggest issue in teenage world today? I said, loneliness.
And they said,
they laughed on the other end of the line. They're like, we can't publish a book called Alone. Nobody's going to buy a book that says I'm alone. Yeah. They said, what's number two? So I wrote a book on sexuality and the dating issue. Mm-hmm. And that's what I released last year, was an expose on teen sex and dating. Yeah. And through the publishing of that book, they call me back and they go, you got to be kidding me. Like, we're talking to people all over the country now and you hit it.
Yeah.
It's loneliness.
Yeah.
Kids are walking today through the high schools feeling all alone.
And you think that is the root of most issues that teens struggle with. When it comes to alcohol issues, when it comes to drug issues, when it comes to promiscuity, you think that stems from the feeling of loneliness.
We can all focus on the veneer stuff, but if we're not addressing the core issue, mm-hmm. all that other stuff is just systemic from a centerpiece issue.
Andy, so kids going to a high school, you know, you've got hundreds to thousands of kids in high school. I went to two high schools growing up. One of them had 400, one had 4,000. How is it that a kid can be going to church, going to youth group, you know, he's got 500 friends on Facebook, he's got a ton of Instagram followers, they're still dealing with loneliness?
Yeah, so I was teaching a Christian worldview in a private school in Atlanta, Georgia, not long ago.
Okay.
There's 50 kids in this senior class, and this is their sort of last hurrah of Christian worldview before they go to college. And so they brought me in to teach the foundations. So I did a seminar for a little while, and I noticed there was a kid sitting at the end of the table, and he's kind of one of those cocky kids that, like, knows everything.
Yeah.
They're really popular. And I said, can I pick on you? And I love you, and everybody loves you, and I just want to pick on you just for a minute. I want to get some information. I said, how many followers do you have on Facebook? And he goes, I got 1,200. 1,200 followers. I'm like, wow. I mean, like, high school senior, 1,200 followers?
Were there 1,200 kids in the school?
No. That's the thing. You know, he's like citywide. This kid's like, has friends all over the place. And I said, well, let's think about those 1,200 friends. I said, let's say that your life hits the wall and the worst thing possible in your life can happen. I said, how many of those people would come to you unsolicited and call you and come to your house and say, I want to be with you through this hard time? He said, maybe two.
Oh.
So we went from 1,200 quote-unquote friends on Facebook that told us I'm popular to two people that would really notice that something was going down in his life. And I thought, that ought to tell us something about what's going on in the social media world. We have this need to be liked and followed, mm-hmm. and we're finding more and more kids that want this connection, but there's not a lot of intimate relationship going on.
Did you see that reality hit the rest of the classroom?
Oh, they go silent. It's amazing. When I talk about this in groups of 50 or 500, the room goes silent. You can hear the pin drop because they all know that looking at somebody's pictures on Facebook is not fulfilling that need that God created us with to be together.
So what you're saying is parents should go home and erase their kids' Facebook accounts.
No, I talk about that in the book, and I get a lot of criticism because people say, well, Facebook's a great thing for connection.
But it's not real friends, Andy. They're not real friends.
They're not real friends. However, we live in a great time. We live in an internet revolution, and there's this social media thing is amazing that you can talk to people all over the world in real time. It's amazing what we can accomplish. However, if we replace a click and a like with what it means to really know and to be known by somebody, we've basically created an illusion of friendship and relationship rather than true, honest, meaningful relationships that God intended.
Yeah. Now, I understand that. I think Facebook is a phenomenal tool. I use it. I love Twitter. I love Instagram. I like those little connections, but I also view it in a sense of reality. You know, I turned my Facebook page public because there were so many people on it. I don't know any of them.
Yeah.
I really know very, very few. It's interesting, though, when you quote-unquote friend someone, all of a sudden it seems that the social mores kind of just go away.
Yeah.
Like, I can ask you anything. Yeah. I can say anything because we're friends, right?
Of course we are.
And I think, you know, I wouldn't say that to real friends of mine.
No.
It seems inappropriate to say it in front of 5,000 other people.
Man, we got to be careful, Ryan, because what you're saying comes from a paradigm of somebody who lived without Facebook. You understand Facebook because it's only been around since 2004. Now, let's think about teenagers who are growing up now who don't know a real world without social media. Now we have junior high kids that are coming to our place that don't know that. They don't know the ills of social norm. They just are living in this really strange environment. They don't know how to communicate to one another. They don't know how to deal with rejection. They don't know how to look at somebody and say, I really empathize and have compassion for you, because we don't know how to do that. that.
So is empathy declining in teens?
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely.
I know parents are listening now going, my kid's on Facebook all the time, Andy. Yeah. They got a smartphone. They're on at the dinner table. Laura and I see that. We were at lunch the other day. There's a family sitting there. Every member of the family had a smartphone out, and they were looking and tapping on their smartphones at a table in public. And I think, okay, you guys got in the car. Well, you got dressed. You got in a car. You chose a restaurant. You came. You ordered. Your food arrived.
And you didn't talk.
There's no interaction happening. Yeah. And there's little kids, you know, probably playing games, maybe not social media.
Yeah.
Parents are sitting here now going, that's my family.
Yeah.
Those are my kids. You're not recommending just erasing social media.
No.
What do you recommend?
I'm saying, parents, we need to be able to teach our kids what real relationships are about. And in order to do that, we have to teach our kids how to use social media. So when a parent comes to me and goes, you know, my kid wants an iPhone. And I go, well, how old's your kid? Oh, she's 12. I'd say, no way.
Really?
You have to teach your kid how
Andy,
to use
that
tool.
My kid's
going to
be weird. All their friends have this.
Hey, my kid's 14 right now, and he asked me for an iPhone. I said, no. And he goes, okay, great. And I said, oh, here's your flip phone. And by the way, here's not just your flip phone. Here's my flip phone that I'm going to let you borrow for a time. And if you ever delete any text or I can pick up your phone, I see some shady things going on, I'm taking my phone back. And I've had parents go, oh my gosh, you're off the reservation, Brainerd. Why would you ever do that? I said, because I'm teaching my kid how to deal with a tool so that when he is 15, 16, 17 years old and I give him access to online material in the palm of his hand, he knows how to use it. Uh-huh. Parents that are just handing their kids iPhones and saying, here, go to town. It's like handing your kid the wild, wild west. I mean, access to internet porn is easy if you give your kid an iPhone. It's hard to regulate. Understanding who your kid's talking to or who's talking to your kid, more importantly, is really hard to regulate if they have all their information in their hand. We have to teach them how to use the tool.
And it sounds like you're being a parent.
Call me crazy.
Yeah, definitely. Then how does a parent teach their children about real intimacy in relationships, what a real friend is?
So Paul says this in Romans. He says, rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn. And I think that was an interesting verse that gives us a light bulb on what it means to have a real relationship with people. Because when you do something great and I come alongside you and encourage you in what you do, all of a sudden you go, oh, he's on my team. And when you're feeling pain, if you have a loss or somebody's died in your family or there's something really bad that's happened, and it's not that I just come to you and I go, well, you know what? God works all things together for the good, although he does those things.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that just really doesn't do it. You just want somebody there that understands where you're at when you're there. And so I'm telling parents, we've got to go back to that premise. We've got to help kids understand, what does it mean to celebrate? What does it mean to mourn? How do we put our kids in positions where they have opportunities to do that? And I would say, you've got to put your kid in a place where, you know, whether they're on an athletic team that's off of the reservation of social media for a while, or they're on a chess club at school, or they're on some sort of extracurricular activity where social media isn't the common vein, but rather is an amendment to the vein.
Okay.
So let's give kids experience with other people. Let's let them understand what it means to encourage each other and feel sad for each other and know each other as people rather than just profile.
Sure.
So at camp, we tell all the kids, we're taking away all your iPhones and iPads and all that stuff. We're going to lock them away. We love iPhones and iPads. We love music. We love social media. We use all that stuff. It's awesome. But let's just fast it for a while, and let's give you a place where you can learn how to be a friend with somebody else. Now, I'm telling you, when kids come and they put that stuff away, it's like taking drugs away from an addict.
Is it really like that?
They shake. They get nervous.
Come on.
Bro, I said one kid, he rated us, you know, I evaluate kids all the time. Are we doing a good job? We're not doing a good job. What can we provide better for you? Kids marking like highest marks ever. And I said, so you want to stay here your whole life, right? And he's like, well, I really kind of want to go home. And I was like, why do you want to go home? He's like, I just got to check my phone, man. And I went, what? This is the most fun time you've ever had in your life. And you just got to check your phone. That's it.
It's real withdrawal.
It's real withdrawal, man. Now, if I go 4 days in and they don't have it, then I can begin talking about it in an objective sense. If I talk about Facebook and social media the first couple of days they're there,
that's it.
Yeah, you don't understand us. You're old. You don't know. But if I give them 4 days of learning how to relate to one another and then go, hey, let's talk about our friends on Facebook. Are they real friends or are they not? Then we can have a conversation.
Are you seeing a change in kids? Because you've got a blog with lots of followers. You've got lots of followers on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I mean, you are connected socially, and you connect with these kids. They come back to camp over the years. Yeah. You travel around, so you see them. Does it make a difference? Are they viewing life in a different way if they can unplug for a little while?
I think you see kids that have the opportunity to unplug and develop relationships. Those are the kids that are successful. And by successful, I mean they know the people that are on their team. They mm-hmm. know the people that are going to be there. When they walk in, you can just tell there's something different about that kid.
Okay.
There's something special about that kid because he can look you in the eye and he can have a conversation with you without checking his text and checking his phone and mm-hmm. checking all his stuff all the time.
Yeah. Andy, what do you say to the parent or the pastor that says, Andy, all that kid really needs is a good relationship with Jesus and they're going to be totally fulfilled? I walk a tightrope here.
Yeah. I understand.
Because I have an intimate, deep relationship with the Lord.
Yeah.
And yet, I need more than that.
Yeah.
I do.
If you go all the way back to Genesis chapter 2, God is walking with Adam, and he sets Adam up in the garden and says, here you go, I'm gonna let you name all the animals today. And right before that, I think it's Genesis 2, it's about 18 or 19, and he says, it is good that man should not be alone.
Yeah.
Now, I read that verse a million times, and through seminary, I had to talk about the origins and creation and all that stuff, and it never really struck me until, I don't know, a couple of years ago, I was reading through that, and I went, wait a second. Adam walked with God, like in real time.
Mm-hmm.
Adam talked with God.
In the cool of the evening,
verbally.
Adam walked with God in the garden.
Adam had a better relationship with God than you and I will have this side of heaven. And yet God still saw fit that he would say, it's good that man shouldn't be alone. And I think a lot of people have used that to point to, this is the beginning of marriage and this is man and woman. And so he had to create man and woman together there. And I think all that's true. But I think a more profound implication of that statement is we need a relationship with God, but we also need a relationship with each other, as evidenced by when Jesus was asked, what's the greatest commandment? He said, love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself.
Mm.
So we need both. We need both, and we can't divorce others from our relationship with God and think we've got the whole package.
Andy, our kids today deal with some heavy, heavy things. We've had school shootings.
Yeah.
They deal with death in a different way. They deal with grief in a different way than maybe I did in high school when I was younger. What do you say to a kid who's really struggled with figuring out who they are? They've dealt with a lot of pain and they're missing that connection with God. It just seems somewhere out there. It's a bit of a nebulous concept. It's not intimate.
Yeah.
You know, I read Psalm 91 with my son. I read it to him every single night before he goes to bed. And I don't want to give him the wrong idea. I don't want to say that, listen, call on the Lord and the angels are going to lift you up and you won't strike your foot against a stone and you're going to stomp on the lion and the snake and bad things aren't going to happen to you, because I know they will.
Yeah.
And yet I want him to call on the Lord when he's in trouble. And I want him to have a relationship to where he really does know the Lord hears him.
Yeah.
What do you say to a kid that's dealt with a lot of stuff and then you go, Andy, I don't have it?
Yeah. That's a loaded question in a lot of ways. And I think my approach, and I'm not a grief counselor, I'm not a professional grief counselor, so I would use, you know, I would definitely call on my friends that know, you know, the stages of grief and how to do that. But mm-hmm. often those guys aren't around and you're just kind of sitting with a kid that's really struggling. And, you know, I kind of just do the best I can and I listen a lot. And I think my relationship with students is elevated when they know that I'm really there with them listening to what they're doing. And as that relationship builds and grows and they go, there's something different about you, because our culture doesn't listen. There's something different about you. You're really interested in my life. Why are you interested in my life? And then I can unpack.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in your life because God's interested in your life. I'm interested in your life because I love you, because God loved me and I'm kind of called to love you like he loved me. And so I approach the relationships not in a check the box manner, but in a real interest and an empathy for where a student is, and then rely on God to do all the calling to himself, because we're all going to go through that time that you described.
Well, Andy, then talk to a parent about listening. They've got a teenager, and they're going through teenager things. And we forget what it was like to fall in love.
Yeah.
Well, that's not real love. Well, it is to them.
It is to them. Yeah.
Talk about listening without just immediately going to solve the problem of just saying, I care about you.
Yeah.
And I'm going to show you that by listening to your problems.
It's funny. A lot of parents think because we don't have much time. You know, I mean, mom's working, dad's working,
yep.
We've got carpool, we got several kids, we're going to all the stuff, and it's just busy, 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 busy. And often we get these problems from our kids and we think, man, if I solve that right now, we can move on to the next thing. But actually what you see, and this is 15 years of teenage work, when a teenager says something that's kind of, I'm having a problem, that's usually testing mom and dad to see, are you really going to listen? And it's the old onion analogy. It's the first layer. And you have to sit there and you have to have a poker face, man. And you got to sit there and say, I hear what you're saying. Is there anything more there? And then let that onion begin to peel back to get down to the depth. And it takes time. There is no pill to parent well fast. It takes time. It takes energy. It takes effort. And it takes you being there.
And I think that's such a valid point. I think we miss that. I think in our society, we have this instant gratification. We want stuff right now. And it's a good reminder, maybe we need to get rid of some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe we don't have our kids in something every single night of the week. Maybe we can just sit there and listen. Maybe being there and spending that much time is more important.
We have a rule at our house. You get one sport a semester. That's all they get. And so choose and choose wisely, because we're not going to become the frenzy that we see.
Well, you know, you got five kids.
I got
Andy
five
Brainer.
Kids. So that's 5 nights a week.
That is 5 nights a week.
But we want to be intentional about that. You know, we want to give our kids places where they can develop memories and they can be in places where they can be with people apart from social media. And I've been offered jobs all over the world to be a part of youth ministries. And I've stayed in the camping, not because I'm a camp guy per se.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not Mr. Zipline and I'm not Mr. Ropes Course. But I think that the retreat scenario that we give teenagers an opportunity to come to and fast a little bit from social media and develop who they are individually and understand where their faith comes from and maybe how to pursue their faith when they go back home. It's the most powerful ministry I've ever been involved in.
Yeah.
So I've turned down a lot of really lucrative and jobs that would, you know, put me on a map, because I believe that this camping thing that I'm doing in the summertime is my laboratory to allow students to come and be who God created them to be.
Now, that's Camp Kivu.
Yeah, Camp Kivu, yeah.
I talked about it in the beginning. I said I'd mention it. Give me 30 seconds on what a gap year is.
The gap year concept was started in Europe, and the idea was that no student that graduated secondary school would go straight to the university. And so that's been going on for a long time. Asia's just picking up on it. Australia's been doing it for a while. And America has just kind of entered into this because we have this extended adolescence that's coming on strong. Mm-hmm. So you have 17, 18, 19-year-old kids that are going off to college, and they're unable to handle the freedom. They don't know what they're going to do with their life. They're wasting money every single day in both semesters. And so we just said, hey, I wonder.
My parents would say, honestly, they would say all of those things about me. I was not ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at the freshman classes at your major public universities, and they're not ready to be there.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not ready to study. And my undergraduate professor friends say, this is just high school. You know, kids are asking for curves and they're asking for extra credit and they're not doing the work and they're not studying and blah, 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 blah. So we decided that we would leverage all of our international relationships around the globe and give kids a real time global worldview. What does the world really look like? And they develop sort of an internship along the way with a foundation of Christian worldview laid underneath.
So you take 1 year.
1 year.
And the kids do what?
They start in Denver, and I watch them here domestically to make sure that they can travel internationally, because several kids just are not ready to travel internationally.
Mm-hmm.
So we work with Mile High Ministries in Denver, just working on inner city urbanization. And I believe that Jeff Johnson is probably one of the best urbanization guys in the world. Then they go to Haiti, and they work with disaster relief organizations to feed kids and orphan kids and construction and accounting and all the things that it takes to do the disaster relief that Haiti will be working on for the next 100 years. Then after Haiti, right now they're in Rwanda, and so they're learning African culture. We've got them hooked into businesses and education places wherever they want to intern.
Mm-hmm.
So they're developing this resume that they're going to have before they go to college. And in the meantime, they're learning what they really want to do.
Yep.
Like, what do they really want? What are they really gifted at?
That's exactly right. Then college becomes a means to an end.
Exactly.
It's a tool. Exactly. I'm going to go to college because I want to do this.
Not just a four-year party.
Not, yep. I'm going to go to college and try to figure out what it is that I
want
to do. Exactly. Oh, it's fantastic. Andy, I could talk to you for days and days
Man.
Our time is gone. I appreciate you being here. I really do love you. I love the work that you do. The book is called Alone, Finding Connection in a Lonely World. I love this. I think you're doing a great job.
Thanks
so much for being here.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. To find out more about Andy's camp, Camp Kivu, or Gap Year, or Andy's book, the one we talked about today, Alone, go to drjamesdobson.org. You can call us for that, 877-732-6825. If you're a teen listening or a parent of a teen who is struggling with loneliness and you need some help, we would love to refer you to a Christian counselor in your area. Again, all of that can be found at drjamesdobson.org or by calling us one last time, 877-732-6825. Thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate you listening, and join us again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.